This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is the morning run, and you're here with Wong Xiaoning and Koo Soo Chuang. Now, in about half an hour, we'll be speaking to Professor Noor Ain Sharia, Professor of Economics at Sun Wei University, on Census 2020. But now, let's talk about GLC transformation, because we are also running a poll this morning asking you, do GLCs have a role to play in reviving the economy post-COVID-19? And you have four options. Yes, no, don't know, and don't care. Meanwhile, the performance of corporate Malaysia has been lackluster for the past few years. And the reason why this discussion about GLCs arise is because 2 days ago during Invest Malaysia, Tan Sri Wahid brought up the subject. And, you know, he pointed out that earnings of public listed companies have declined by 5.4% between 2015 and 2019. Now, the question is, could GLCs then be a means to reinvigorate the performance of Malaysia's public listed companies?
Well, according to the people that polled on Twitter so far, 80% seem to think so. And they are obviously an integral part of the economy. But as you say, Tan Sri Wahid Omar, now the chairman of Bursa, has floated the idea that past successes like the GLC transformation program, which ran from 2004 to 2015, could be replicated to achieve the same. Because he said that under the GLC transformation program, GLCs were transferred into companies, transformed into companies with better performances and governance. Of course, I want to also cite that Tan Sri Wahid Omar was the former CEO of Telekom Malaysia and also CEO of Maybank.
Yeah, so over the 11-year period, the net profit of 17 GLCs grew by over 10% per annum from 10 billion to 26.2 billion ringgit, while their combined market capitalization grew nearly three times from around 130 billion to 380 billion. Now, we all know we are facing an economic slowdown due to the pandemic. So it seems like it makes a lot of sense if GLCs could be harnessed to help the economy recover. But I think one of the outstanding questions, which has never been resolved and keeps coming up, is reform within GLCs. And that has been a point of concern under this PN administration with, I would say, a spate of leadership changes and board appointments at GLCs, GLICs, and also, of course, at statutory bodies.
Yeah, and of course, the other concern was that GLCs tended to crowd out the rest of the private sector. And that's no surprise, because if you've got certain monopolistic situations within the GLC fold, then how can private sector companies compete, right? I mean, for example, Tenaga Nasional has a monopoly over distribution of electricity. Malaysia Airports has a monopoly over 99% of the country's airports, etc., 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 right? There's no more. There's just so many companies in the GLC hemisphere which have control over their sectors.
Yeah, so for some thoughts on how GLCs can spur economic revival, we speak to Professor Edmund Terence Gomez, Professor of Economics at University Malaya. He is also the author of the book Minister of Finance Incorporated, Ownership and Control of Corporate Malaysia, which takes a deep dive into the intricacies of GLCs and GLICs in Malaysia. Professor, do you think GLCs could play a big role in reviving the economy post-COVID-19? And what are the stumbling blocks?
We are now confronted with a serious pandemic. The pandemic contributed to a closure of the economy. That meant private firms could not function. In a situation where companies are in lockdown, what this means is the government has to intervene far more effectively. And one way in which the government can intervene is through the GLCs. After all, even the current finance minister, Tunku Safarul, said this. He's going to use the government ecosystem to help revive the economy. The government ecosystem he was referring to was the GLC world. And he showed it in his stimulus packages. If you look at the stimulus packages, they talk about using the banks as a mechanism to control interest rates, putting the moratorium on them. He also talked about using the utilities companies, power supply. He talked about telcos. These are all GLC-related institutions, which he knew he could use effectively to help keep the economy afloat and also to get help to the ground. So there's so much good we can do with the GLCs if they are used properly. But therein comes the problem. On one hand, they know they can use the GLCs effectively, but you must put the right people there to ensure that this is done in a manner that benefits the economy and the people. But at the same time, the GLCs, these very same GLCs, are institutions which can be used to consolidate political support at a time when the government is weak. So here's why we need to make a distinction between the executive control and ownership of the GLCs. This is the important lessons we have learned over the past 3 months about why GLC reforms are required.
And for GLCs which are listed, is there an inherent conflict of interest? How should they balance between minority interests and the wider social agenda?
The question really is about the board of directors and the management. How are the board of directors selected? In whose interest are they acting? Are they performing their fiduciary duty? If they are performing their fiduciary duty in the interest of these companies, then I don't see a problem with the government having major ownership of these companies. If you look at the high-performing economies, in spite of the crisis, they would be countries such as China, Singapore, Vietnam. They seem to have dealt well or seem to be coping well with the crisis. And all these countries, especially China, are countries which are led by SOEs in the corporate sector. And they're playing a big role in helping the economy to regenerate growth at a time of this crisis. So it's a question of how the companies are employed and whether the boards have the autonomy to act in the interest of the company as well as in the interest of the economy. That's the key issue which we should be looking into, especially at a time like this. The problem with the GLCs, what should be their primary motivation? Should it be to garner significant profits, or do they also have a social orientation? Now, I would argue that in the case of the GLCs, there's no necessity to, especially at the time of crisis, to focus primarily on the profit side. There's an importance to look at also at the social side. And this was already clearly manifested by the government itself in the stimulus package when they said they're going to use the GLCs in a manner in which to help people, to help the economy.
And that was Professor Edmund Gomez, Professor of Economics at University of Malaysia, ending on the note that, yeah, you know, we do kind of know that for GLCs which are listed, they do have obligations to the minority shareholders. But maybe in this new COVID-19 era, that argument is slightly changed.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, these GLCs, right? Because now you can say that the GLCs are going to be at the bedrock of the economy. They're not going to sack too many staff or terminate too many people because of the systemic risk of a huge job losses. But at the same time, in a competitive global landscape, a lot of these guys that are hired as chairman designates or non-executive chairman or even top management, some of them might not pass muster in terms of the quality and qualitative test. So you've got to ask those questions. But as equally Professor Gomez said, this government ownership allows them to curry favour politically.
Well, something that we'll be continuing to talk about. But up next, we're speaking to Chelsea Tan, analyst at Morningstar. And that's going to be happening after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.